We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1. Where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day? Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by DoorDash and BetOnline.ag. I'm Pete, joined as always by Darius. And the Lakers have won Game 2 of the 2020 NBA Finals, 124-114, going up 2-0 in this series. And Darius and I were talking right before we got on and just asking him, just kind of preliminary thoughts before we get too into it. And he's telling me that he's kind of irritated, right? Just like one of those games where the Lakers won, and they weren't really challenged, but you know that wasn't their best. And it was, the Miami Heat were missing Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo. And I had a very different experience with the game, and it's so rare that Darius and I, when we, in our pre-show talk, like, we're usually like, yeah, oh yeah, and then this thing, you guys listen, we're very simpatico on a lot of things. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. You were really irritated by this one. I want to explain a little bit why I was, my jaw was on the ground at first, and then I was just very, very comfortable, sipping my hot cocoa on the couch type of energy this whole game. So we talked in the show after game one a bit about some of the fundamental problems that Miami has with going man-to-man and switching and the targeting Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson. And in the preview of the series, we said, don't expect them to play a lot of zone, even though we went into their zone. But also in that game one, after watching one game, we're like, yeah, they're going to play zone. And then I tweeted right before the game, and we were on the same page of that. Like, they're going to play a ton of zone in this game. And they did. They played it for the vast majority of this game. The part they didn't play it, though, was the first 4 minutes of the game, 5 minutes of the game. And they called a timeout. We were up 14-8, and 12 of our points were in the paint. And this was my jaw on the ground type of moment, right? So I expected them to come out in a zone, but they started out in man-to-man. And it was dad versus young teenage son playing one-on-one type of, you know, the physical differences. We didn't really run plays much at all. LeBron bodied them. AD bodied them. These are guys who were not particularly physical, right? We had Myers Leonard get the start in this game alongside Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson. So you've got three guys that would be targets for, you know, a defense in a man-to-man type of scheme, all going against our monstrous guys. Now, you know, there's only so many ways we can see. We've been banging this bigger, stronger, faster drum all year. And if you listen to the pod, you get the idea. But so why I think Darius and I go to the thought before the game of they're going to play a lot more zone in game two than in game one is in large part due to the injuries, right, with Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo. But not just the injuries, those injuries, it's who replaces them. When you have weak individual defenders and you have multiples of those in a lineup, like, you can get away with one sometimes, and that's hard in the NBA at this level in the finals, right? But one you can live with sometimes. But two, you're in trouble, and this was a lineup with three. And it's like in high school, which is more of the realm of zones, that's what you do when you're severely athletically outmatched. You're playing the number one team in your league. They're 7-0 in league and are winning every game by 25 points. You're a scrappy 500 team, right? And you're trying to compete with them. They're bigger, faster, stronger than you. You go to a zone because zones force – you beat zones with passes much more than you do with dribbling. And you saw a lot of ball movement from the Lakers in this game. And you can hope that we played a team once that they went, I think, 2-for-31 from three in a game. And we beat them when we had no business beating them, right?
Sure.
And we were in zone for a lot of it. But, like, they were just missing shots. Like, I wish I could say, like, oh, we were flying over the place. I mean, when we realized we had a chance to win, you know, it was like, oh, crap, you know. Like, it really kicked in with the kids. But that's kind of what Miami's best bet was, right? And the hope is that the Lakers miss open threes. The Lakers did miss open threes. And these are some of the facts about this game that have my jaw on the floor and also produced one of the least intense NBA Finals games I've ever seen in my life, especially this early in the series. Sometimes you'll get to 3-0 in a series, like against the Nets in 2001 and 2002 in the finals. Or no, they were just 2002, right? Yeah, in 2002 finals. You get to that point, and it's a game four, and then it's kind of this level of intensity. But I was stunned by the lack of intensity, and it's because Miami, as a function of strategy, by going to that zone, their best bet was hoping we would miss open threes. And we did. KCP went 2-for-11 from three. Danny Green went 1-for-8. Those are our shooters. Miami outshot us from the free throw line, doubled us up, 34-17. And they shot 91% from the free throw line, going 31-for-34. And this was a 10-point game that was never particularly close. Miami had everything go right for them in terms of what could go right with this zone. Lakers go 16-for-47 from three. That's 34%. 47 is a massive number for us. And again, our shooters didn't shoot particularly well. Rondo was really the only guy who shot well, and LeBron shot okay.
Caruso?
Caruso, he hit two. Oh, that's right. He hit two. Yeah, yeah.
No, so Rondo, Caruso, and Markieff Morris, right? They went mm-hmm. 8.
Oh, that's so true. They went shot a lot better.
They went 7-for-13, right? Mm-hmm. So they had 7 of the Lakers' 16 makes from behind the arc. And
forgive me, I'm yes.
So the rest of the team went.
I'm referring to the starters, though. Like, our shooters could not shoot in this game, but there are so many problems for them, so many places on the floor. Even, like, if it's Kendrick Nunn dropping down to KCP missed a three, and it's the weak side wing's responsibility to drop down and box out the dunker spot guy. That's the rotation right there. Well, that's Kendrick Nunn trying to box out Anthony Davis, who was like 13 of 14, 14 of 15 at some point in this game, and finished 15 of 20 from the field. What has my jaw on the ground is that, like, a lot of things went right for Miami in terms of this. That's the best they could have hoped for.
Yeah.
And it was still a 10-point game that was never close.
No, that's exactly right. I really don't have anything to add. I thought that this was... I told you before before we started to record that may have been Miami's best shot in terms of, like, what this specific group can do. We'll see if Bam comes back on Sunday. Dragic is apparently going to try to play at some point this series. We'll see about that. He's got a torn plantar fascia. Like, that's a pretty serious injury. That's normally like a 4 to 6 week injury, depending on the severity of the tear, and not a 4 to 6 day injury, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I thought that this was a very good Miami game, and they sort of punched above their weight class to mm-hmm. a certain extent for the talent that they had on the floor. They got some really good performances from Kelly Olynyk. I thought that Jay Crowder shot the ball well. I thought Kendrick Nunn, while not like he didn't play great, but I thought he was overall like a net positive in terms of like what he was bringing offensively and didn't get destroyed defensively except for on the backboards. Which, hey, he's a 6'2" guard. He's not right. going to box out Anthony Davis. One of the reasons why I think I was frustrated this game was, and this maybe came across in the preview that I wrote for the game, there, to me, when a team is down like this in terms of players, and especially some of their better players, it allows everyone else on the court to sort of play with a certain amount of freedom, especially role players, right? They're not going to look over their shoulder. They're not getting pulled because Bam's coming back in or Dragic is coming back in. That's not going to happen. Like, the minutes that they're going to play are almost for sure there, and that allows mm-hmm. them to play with a certain amount of looseness in an NBA mm-hmm. Finals game. For the Lakers, what I was hoping that they would do was just completely smash them.
Sure.
Like that's...
It's not our personality, though.
That's what I wanted, was just... Mm-hmm. So I wanted it to look like the middle portion of Game 1, right? Which mm-hmm. is, this team cannot play with the Lakers. Get up by...
But that...
Get, like, when they were up by 16 or so, I thought, okay. Mm-hmm. Here it comes. But then after that, it settled back in the 8 to 10 range, and then it was 8 to 10 the rest of the game. And playing even that way for the rest of the game was a bit frustrating to me. Now, I also told you, I'm not going to be a wet blanket about an NBA Finals win, right? Like, they won the game, and that was great. But for me, it was sort of just like, all right, stop making the same mistake. Stop settling for the same three. That three is wide open again. How about you make that one now? Mm-hmm. And so some of that was just grating on me in a way where I was like, here's your chance to just put this team away.
I totally get it. Yeah, and we could have at any point if we wanted to. Right, I'm sitting here saying like, oh, we're so much better than them. And it was a 10-point game. We didn't blow them out, right? But this is what I saw. And this is something that I've seen in finals past with this team. This run is reminding me more and more of 2001 in its, we don't step on teams the way that you're talking. Right. But this was a blowout game to me, not on the scoreboard, but by feel, in that when teams know that they can't beat a team and a team knows that team can't beat them. Teams will go into that back and forth. Like it was, we played even. That was the lazy river. If you're talking about like raging waters or a water park, right? That was the lazy river of finals games.
Sure.
We they knew that, you know, we get all these buckets in the paint in the first half, then we get all of these easy shots. They can't defend us. They cannot defend us. They have fundamental problems in their personnel that make it there's no good options. We talked about this in the last game. The Lakers are going to continue to score on them because every option they have has a fatal flaw. And it's not scheme, it's personnel. That this dude cannot hang with that dude in the way that he needs to hang with that dude in this particular rotation or situation, or it's just he can't. It's not going to happen over and over and over again the way it does. Like, it's not boxing where you land one shot and you knock out Goliath, you know? Like, you got to do this to the tune of 100, and especially the way that, you know, they can't be physical, right?
If I could jump, we'll jump in. It's whack-a-mole for the Heat at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lakers continue to have another answer for them at every turn. And I totally get that, right? There's really no getting around that with these versions of these teams. And in some way, this is going to sound weird. I would have loved for Miami to be completely healthy just off principle, right?
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Mm-hmm. Right, just off principle. I want the other team to be at their best, but selfishly, from a Lakers fan perspective, right, where all I really want is for the team to win, and so it doesn't matter how they win. No one remembers, like, the 89 finals, right, where everyone on the Lakers had torn hamstrings, mm-hmm. and the Pistons win back-to-back or whatever, right?
Right?
Or they win their first title.
Sure.
No one,
I think they would have beaten us if we were healthy, by the
sure,
way.
Sure, but yeah. I'm just saying, no one is...
2008, Bynum and Ariza?
Yeah, there's just always stuff like this, and that's just how it goes.
It's part of the game.
Like, it's just
KD
how it
Clay
goes.
Last year.
Yeah. But... the, like, 75-40 run or 30 run, I think it was 75-30, like, run. And that's not a run. Zach Lowe said this on his podcast.
It's a marathon, man.
That's not a run. Like, that's a game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's basically a full game worth of, like, we're two times as good as you, right? And so that's a team feeling like they're being pushed to be at their best.
Mm-hmm.
And this game, the Lakers were not pushed to be at their best. And they played at like a B plus mm-hmm. level. Anthony Davis played at like an A level for mm-hmm. that stretch during the third quarter. And that was totally enough to win an NBA Finals game. And there's a certain sort of, I don't know, selfish fan or me, or just basketball fan that wants to see both teams at their best, and especially the team that I want to win. I really want to see them at their best. And I think the players themselves want to be at their best. And even the looks on their faces after the game was a little bit of, they all know they can play better than this.
But you can't, Darius, you can't fake fear.
Yeah, and you can't manufacture it too. I'm with you.
No, like, they're not afraid of Miami at all. And so they know that if, you know, Miami hits a couple shots, it's a 6-point game now. Like, just turn it up for a little bit and it's a 14-point game now. And this is what I'm marveling at. Bro, this Miami team beat Milwaukee in 5. And I know they're missing two of their very main guys tonight. But that 75-40 run, like, what do we talk about when we were talking about, we knew that 18-0 run against Milwaukee?
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember that in that game?
Yeah.
And I've mentioned that particular run a couple of times. That's a serious, because if you're a high end team, and we thought Milwaukee was possibly a finals opponent, right? The probable finals opponent, even coming out of the west, out of the east. If you're that level of a team, you can stop it before it gets to 18. You have multiple opportunities and multiple parts of what you do that are generally unstoppable for the rest of the league, right? That's why you have the record that you do and you're on a 70-win pace. So when you can go 18-0 on a 70-win pace team that's trying, that is – that's next level ceiling, man. That's you're playing outdoors at that point. There's not a ceiling, and that's before the games really, really matter. And Anthony Davis being able to take it up a couple of levels in the playoffs makes that whole concept just even more severe. And so I hope they play again, right? I hope they're healthy, but it's not like it's a personnel thing. I am blown away by in this year that was supposed to be parity, this one team emerged as way better than everybody else. And it just happened to be our team.
Yeah, this Lakers team is looking more and more like the juggernaut team that was
the conquering horde, man.
Well, really, and even going back to some of our early discussions about what this team could be, and this is a different version too, right? Like, they've made some changes, but they are playing more and more towards the best versions of themselves over the course of a playoff run. And not this specific game, but this run in general, this is what their peak sort of looks like, right? And as a fan, that's incredible to watch. And so I'm with you there. I think the nitpicky sort of perfectionist part of me, right?
Yeah, and it's great. We need that. That's part of like our Lakers soul too, right? Is like Kobe, like, why didn't you win by 45? You know, like
the thing is though, is like that's not my typical reaction to things like this, uh-huh. Right? I am much more of the guy who finds
Yeah, that's why I was surprised.
Who finds the optimistic side?
They had no chance in this game.
That's why. Honestly, it's such a weird thing to say, but that's why I wanted more. Right? There is a ruthlessness in me as a competitor as well, where I'm just like, oh, you've got no chance. Well, then I want to bury you. It's like if I had the opportunity, we've all played pickup ball, right?
Mm-hmm.
And games to 21. If we're up 17-3, I want to win 21-3.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Oh, I don't want to win 21-14. That's just me personally.
I'm like that too. I wanna win. I'm very competitive. It's more to me about the outcome though than it is about like embarrassing you. You know, I mean, there are some teams. I guess if we were playing certain teams, well, said some things.
If
we were playing certain things, I would want us to be getting those 35-40. I guess I just don't feel that like it felt so secured. What's the point? What's the difference? You know,
I'm with you. Like, there is also a part of me though where you're talking about the result, and I'm talking about the result too. But I would also switch it to process.
And I know, but this is the end of the process, man.
It is, and
there ain't nobody else to conquer.
I'm with you 100%. As the person in me though that can't turn that part of my brain off when I'm watching.
I get it.
Right.
I get it.
Then it's like, oh, another swing three miss, right? Like, oh, another pass where you hedge high on the dribble handoff sequence, quick dive by the screen man, where's the help? Like, another one of those, right? I was talking to you about that before we started to record the pod, that's like, I call that the Kyle Korver pass because and Robinson and Hero and even Olynyk were all sort of making that pass. And it was like it was just one of those things where I wanted them to clean up all of the little things. even though in the end, I get it did not matter in the end. The Lakers were clearly the superior team. they were going to win this game. And some of the things that just happened just annoyed me. What could I say? That's not...
You're not wrong about any of it, man. Like, you know how much I care about those details. You know how that I see them, too. And I know we played like crap, and we barely played defense in this game, and our shooters didn't shoot well. I guess for me, I look at it a little differently in that with everything that's happened this year, and with... I mean, and that means so many things for so many people, but just in the Lakers family, with everything that's happened this year, like, what would you, how cool would it be to snap your fingers and be watching game three of the 2001 NBA Finals to experience the for the first time again?
Sure, sure, sure.
Right? Because we talk about these teams 20 years later, and they're deified, right? They are etched in stone as what they will always be.
They're royalty.
In Lakers lore.
They're royalty.
They're royalty. They're part of Lakers canon. But there's also a feeling, that's why I tweeted out a while back during the Denver series about this is what watching Shaq and Kobe was like. And most of the people that replied or responded, you know, were Laker fans that were either like, man, I was 5 years old during that time, so this is awesome and I get to experience it, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, discussing the, like, well, you know, AD isn't as physical as Shaq, right? Getting into the basketball of it, and that's part of the fun of the discussion and whatnot. But there was one contingent that got really mad about that, and it was non-Laker fans.
Sure.
It was non-Laker fans, often relatively young. So they weren't, even if they were alive, they were not, you know, teenagers during that. It's 2001. It's almost 20 years ago, right? So you have to be at least a certain age to have been old enough to not just like sort of remember it, but be like, that was awesome and appreciate all the reasons why. And the non-Laker fan contingent was like, whoa, whoa there, buddy. No, it's not, you know? And I was like, huh. And in reading the responses, I realized that they didn't experience those teams on a day-to-day basis like I did. Like, I know exactly what I'm saying when I compare a run with a Shaq and Kobe 2000 or any of those championship runs, but especially like 2001. I know what was coming out of my mouth, the weight of that, of comparing it to a Shaq and Kobe type of run. What I wouldn't give to watch those two tear up this league like for the first time again, experience those games for the not 20 years later in the highlight clips or the, you know, the Fletcher Thomas YouTube videos where you find the whole thing, the whole 2 hours and 45 minute version of it. It's all grainy. I don't know how our eyes still work watching that. What I wouldn't give to experience that again for the first time. And this is like that. Anthony Davis is having one of the greatest playoff runs of all time. LeBron is killing it as well, and you can tell he got way more in the tank whenever he needs to access it. And we saw that. I love that we got a LeBron, like, that's that dude game in game five, right? So I am less zoomed in on the details right now.
Sure.
Feeling in a place that from a basketball standpoint, not just my fandom, but just from a, if I was the coach of the Miami Heat, what would I do right now? Realizing that there's nothing to be done. I am trying to be in the moment and enjoy after all this year what is one of the greatest basketball teams I've ever seen. And even just comparing to Laker teams, right? Like, take my bias against other teams out of that. This is, if this isn't the best Lakers team we've had, it's very close to the top. And so the ability to spend one more week immersed in the amazingness of this team, I'm so grateful for this team and this season and how it went and how it's going still, right? I'm already talking in past tense, but it just feels like this culmination of we've been through so much, you know, emotionally, and I'm trying to be in the moment and appreciate that I'm seeing greatness right now, not just talk about it as something that existed in the past because I didn't recognize that it was greatness in the moment.
Oh, I'm sure I felt that in game one, right? And I'm sure I'll feel that again over the course of this series. I think when we get to the second half of the pod and maybe we dig in a little bit more to like the individual performances and some of the tactical stuff that mattered, and then even start to talk a little bit about game three, I could dive in a little bit more as to sort of the disconnect between what a normal Laker game looks like and how this diverged from that in enough ways that it was sort of like watching one of those. You ever seen one of those TV shows and they would do this in like 80s and 90s comedies, right? Where they would do like sort of a parody of their own show within the show. And so they'd they'd have like characters that look and act like the characters from the show, but they're played by different actors. And that's how I felt at times during...
I love that analogy. Yeah.
During this game where it's just like, okay, these are the Lakers, clearly.
It sort of looks
right?
like us.
Uh-huh. Right? Yeah. Like they're wearing the uniform. That's clearly Danny Green right there, and that's clearly KCP, and obviously that's AD and LeBron, but the style of play was not on the Lakers' terms. It was on the Heat's terms, and I know. Credit to the Lakers for winning this game convincingly, playing a style that was not their own. It's like they jumped into the Heat's game and said, oh yeah, you want us to play this way? Guess what? We'll beat you this way too. And that,
Darius,
that on its own.
This is why this is one of the greatest teams of all time. It's just another one of the many shape-shiftings that we've done. The different versions of ourselves that we can turn ourselves into. In Houston, this lineup we've never played before with Keefe as the five, right? We take out all our bigs, and then all of a sudden they smoke Houston. Because that was, whatever it was about that lineup, was a glaring weakness for Houston. And then we try to do that against Denver, and their bench is way too athletic. We go way too small. Right, JaVale can't keep up on the perimeter, and then it's okay. Well, how do we solve them? Start Dwight, and now we're this big bruising team that really gave Jokic and Denver issues. Right, Dwight was phenomenal in that.
Yeah,
and now we play this team that plays a lot of zone. Didn't do it in game one, but some personnel. Personnel demanded that they did in game two. And it's something that they do on a regular basis. And it wasn't just AD does something monstrous over Kendrick Nunn. The Lakers picked apart that zone. We shot like crap and dropped a buck 24.
Yeah.
And on open shots. And it's in large part because we can put LeBron James in the middle of that zone, Rajon Rondo getting 10 assists out of the middle of that zone. It's like whatever you need, whatever the basketball situation calls for, we got multiple dudes who can do that at an elite level. It's extraordinary, man. And that even goes to, we're going to talk about this all summer. I'm sorry, I'm rambling so much in this, but like even like the Avery Bradley signing, that is the, you know, heat up the ball, on-ball defender type of guy, where if we needed to shapeshift toward Avery Bradley style of play, like Avery Bradley is one of the best in the league at a certain style of playing defense. And sometimes that style is effective against what the other team is doing, and sometimes it's less effective. But the point is that you've got all these different tools in the toolbox that whenever it's like, oh, I need to do this, oh, let's go bring in this, and it's elite. Oh, well, this is something totally different. Let's bring this in, and it's elite. It's just, I'm just dumbfounded by how good this team is.
They are you know, I made the Shang Tsung analogy a few pods ago. If you're a kid and you're too young for that, then let's just use like Mystique from the X-Men instead, mm-hmm. right? Because there is this ability to sort of to transform and be something different and mold your game to fit the circumstances and then still play at a high level. And this Lakers team does that maybe better than any other Lakers team, because the other Lakers teams that have been great over the years, and I've seen plenty of them, mm-hmm. have been this is our style and you can't keep up with it, right? Mm-hmm. The Showtime Lakers were the consummate, like, push the pace, fast break team. They were very good on defense, but when the game slowed down, they had three of the best post players in the entire league. They had Jabbar, they had Worthy, and then they had Magic Johnson. And in a world that centered on post play,
in that style of basketball,
they were ridiculously difficult to deal with. And so they never had to change. You had to hope that you were better than them. And some years, other teams were. The Lakers went to 9 finals. They won 5 of them, right? And so they were not the best team several years. That's fine. They were one of the best teams every year, though, and that was wonderful for my childhood.
Yes, it was.
The Shaq and Kobe teams were very similar in that their style was their style, right? They ran the triangle. They had Shaq inside. They had Kobe on the perimeter. It did not matter what you had to try to combat that. They were better than you. They could always go to Shaq inside. They could always run some action for Kobe or have him create. And if everything with the triangle broke down, they could go screen and roll and play two-man mm-hmm. game. And that was that. And they were too good. They were too good. This Lakers team, and I wrote about this at the site, right, in terms of LeBron and Anthony Davis and that idea of the key maker, right, and those two players being the bridge between an old era of basketball and this new era of basketball that is more perimeter centric, and then when you tack on the other pieces around them, like a Dwight Howard, right, or a Markieff Morris, or a Kyle Kuzma, or a Rajon Rondo, or an Avery Bradley, right? Mm-hmm. And you can go in all of these different directions because LeBron and AD are the ultimate key. They are the key maker. They are they offer you the path between two different, mm-hmm. completely stopped, yeah. like, two completely different styles of play. They turn the key and they open the door, and then suddenly you're this now. And there's no way that malleability that this team has is a function of their greatness. Mm-hmm. And to now see them say, oh, okay, well, you're going to play us in zone? All right, well then, this makes Rajon Rondo more important this game than like an Alex Caruso or even a Danny Green or any of these other role player types, because we're going to crack your zone from the middle, and it doesn't have to be the 6'11 monster forward who does it, right? Or the 6'9 greatest of all time player. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a 6'1 point guard. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting to see this team morph and shift and play a totally different style, really from one game to the next.
It's almost like you have the superstardom of a Shaq and Kobe with the versatility of like that 09 team.
Yeah.
The 09 team is the closest team I can think of that could shapeshift to the same degree that this team could. There was a version of it that was really big with Kobe and Powell and Bynum. And then there was a version of it that was really graceful. There was a fast version of it, and that was the Sasha, Jordan Farmar, Trevor Ariza, Powell at the five, Lamar at the four. Those teams got up and down. And then there was the winning time version that had Kobe, Lamar, and Powell. And that was the triumvirate that it was built around. And so they were the most versatile team I can think of in Lakers history up until this point. But they did not have this gear defensively.
No, they didn't. And they didn't have the blunt force tool that is like LeBron James.
I like that better probably because they were good on defense, but that like blunt force nature.
Yeah, but like the Lakers though, and it's weird that we're doing this podcast now in like the middle of the finals and not like a month from now in the offseason. But the idea of the like that 09 Lakers team, the team that basically decided, oh yeah, Boston, you guys play that strong side zone. Guess what? We can do that too. And we can do that with length.
And oh, that's good.
Like good in the example. Same way that they had KG and Pierce and Perkins and like PJ Brown and James Posey, right? It was that style of length and Tibbs teaching them to ice the screen and roll and funnel baseline and the help is showing early. The Lakers then took that idea and said, yeah, guess what? We can play strong side zone too. And we're going to flood the strong side with length and arms and quickness. And when you try to throw it over the top, the rotations are going to be there because it's Pau Gasol and Lamar Odom and Trevor Ariza that are chase and Kobe Bryant who are chasing off of that, right? And so Derek Fisher was 6'1 or 6'2 or whatever, but the rest of that starting group was, or the closing group, I should say, was 6'6 Kobe Bryant, 6'7 Trevor Ariza, 6'10 Lamar Odom, 7 foot Pau Gasol, and it was just flooding you with length and quickness, and that was it. There was no, but this team, this version of the Lakers has that plus ruggedness, plus physicality, right? And so they've got that blunt force tool. They have Dwight Howard. They have Anthony Davis now. They have LeBron James. And that idea of, okay, well, not only are they big and strong, but they're fast and they're agile and they're quick and they're smart. And that
the smart part needs to be talked about more too. Yeah.
Look, why don't we kick it to break? Because all of that played itself out in this game in waves that I think still mattered, even though the Lakers were not playing at their top gear.
Yeah. Let's throw it to break. We'll be back to discuss more. You've counted on restaurants and now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash has saved me on many nights where I've been working on an LFR video and haven't had time to make anything. And it's been so convenient to have the food that I want to eat show up at my door. And now they do that in a way where your food will be left safely right outside of your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. You can choose from your favorite restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery too. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite spot, and food is on its way. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery too. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local spot, and food is on its way. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BLUEWIRE. That's all one word. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code BLUEWIRE. Don't forget, that's code BLUEWIRE for $5 off your first order of $15 or more with DoorDash. So you talked about how this version of the Lakers in Game 2 looked sort of like imposters or actors playing a, you know, different actor playing the same part. You know the actor, but it's a just a different version of them, which again is speaks to the shape-shiftiness, the versatility of this team. But we didn't look like ourselves on the defensive end as well, right?
Yeah.
And what did you see that kind of didn't disrupt you the wrong way from a basketball standpoint.
Well, I mean, I just thought there were a lot of possessions offensively where I thought the Lakers were not as patient as they could have been against the zone. And some of the frustration that also seeped in was that when they were patient and they did get the good shot, they just missed. And mm-hmm. and while I am a process over results guy, I do like the results too, mm-hmm. right? The results mm-hmm. matter. And right. so you want to see your guys rewarded on a certain level, because it's harder to remain patient and continue to do the right thing when at the end you're not rewarded for that. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that the Lakers ebbed and flowed a little bit more than what I would have liked offensively. And as far as the like didn't look like themselves part, this team had 9 fast break points this game. Mm-hmm. Sure. That's really low. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and even though they had 56 points in the paint and were a plus 10 in terms of points in the paint, a lot of that came from the types of plays that, or in different ways than what the Lakers would typically get them, a lot on offensive rebounds, a lot on like little baseline, little like duck-ins mm-hmm. against the zone. And it's just a different style. And so everything was just unfamiliar enough where I was just like, this is working, but I don't quite like it. Like I said, they won the game on Miami's terms, which were Miami mm-hmm. wanted this game to be ugly. They wanted to muck it up.
It was their only chance. Yeah.
They played a zone. They wanted to limit possessions, right? And so mm-hmm. even though the Lakers got – so the Lakers took 97 shots this game. Mm-hmm. The Heat only took 71 shots. Now, part mm-hmm. of that was because they got to the foul line a bunch. But – a 26 difference in mm-hmm. field goal attempts. That's a gigantic number.
Yeah, man.
And normally with a number that big, you win by more than 10 points, right? Just sure. because you're going to find even more ways to score.
Why did we, this is something that I think we need to do better on in just NBA coverage in general, but a lot of times we'll go off of net rating or a final analytic, right? We go to the result that's produced. They rank this in defensive rating in the league, and this guy has a plus this PIPM, and which is not to denigrate the every stat has a use in places where it's very good, right? But what we need to do a better job of is understanding how we got to that number. Like, how did we arrive at that number? Why is that number that number? And when you talk about the 26 extra attempts, what does that tell you? Like, that screams something at me. How do you get 26 extra shots?
Oh, they were so much just bigger and just yes. like getting to the offensive glass. During the game, yes. I thought Van Gundy made an interesting point, or it might have even been Mark Jackson, where he was wondering, hey, do you think Miami's going to start to put maybe their bigger players on the back line of the zone rather than having them play up high? Because you can't continue to ask Tyler Hero and Kendrick Nunn to box out Anthony Davis. You just can't. But they never did make that change. And mm-hmm. that speaks to a point that you made during the recap pod from game one, or it may have even been in the conversation we were having after it. But the idea of the Heat are who they are. They're not going yeah. to like change up mid-game. Like, they are strategic and they can make adjustments, but they're not going to upend their entire approach to something mid-game. And or maybe even mid-series, because there's no precedence for them to have success trying that.
But they're going to have to go to those places to compete, right? Like, the answers they've tried to come up with so far, this is Spoelstra's job, right? I'm not saying that it's going to work. I'm just saying that it's a coach's responsibility to try to everything that you possibly can to see if something's going to work. So we've been talking like this is a foregone conclusion, but Eric Spoelstra is trying to win game three.
Yeah.
So let's say he makes that adjustment and moves Butler and Crowder from the top two to the bottom
three. Good luck.
Right?
Good luck.
Okay, so what does that leave? So then you exchange. You've got Duncan Robinson and Kendrick Nunn or Goran Dragic up top. What is the fundamental problem of that?
That's going to make all those entries to the high post so much easier.
That's right. And what happens when the ball gets to the high post that we put in the high post?
When it gets to the high post there and there's not those big players who are back pressuring, especially, then LeBron's then going to turn and look to get downhill. Or he's going to turn and look to score from there. And AD is going to be taking these basically free throw line jumpers, or he's just going to step in and then attack the rim.
Elevate over the top of them.
Yeah. And the touches are going to multiply in the middle of the zone exponentially.
So would you agree that if you allow high post catches against a 2-3 zone, if you allow those touches against the Lakers,
you're dead.
It's done. It's
yes.
done.
You're,
right?
Yes.
So again, this is another part of why Miami can't defend us. This isn't just like Laker fan, like, hey, Lakers are great. We're going to always be great because we're the Lakers, and try to rationalize it. There are legitimate basketball reasons where you go like, okay, well, what if we try this? No, that's, and it's there. These are massive, severe disadvantages that it's stunning to me that there's so much of this in a finals matchup. You know, you rarely get this. It wasn't like this against Denver, where there were parts of what Denver did that gave us problems, legitimate problems. And it wasn't as many problems as we gave them, of course. But in this series, in this matchup in particular, I'm stunned at how quickly you cycle through the, well, what about this? What about that? What about that? And you're just like, they don't have the personnel to do it.
Yeah, in a way, it was very much like the same issues that the Rockets had, but the Rockets had James Harden, and they had a more they just had James Harden. Like they had,
well, James Harden draws a second guy. At least you can get to the point defensively of second defender attention, and that's a very important thing in playoffs, especially when. It's different than the regular season because in the regular season, people will make the wrong rotation more often. In the playoffs, they're paying more attention. The stakes are higher. The stakes being higher means that everybody's going to do what they're supposed to do because they've done this their whole lives playing basketball. They know their shell drills, their rotations from different spots on the floor. But everyone's going to do what they're supposed to do more often. And then it becomes of, do you have individual players that can draw a second advantage, that second defender all on their own? Because you can't rely on the defense to mess up as frequently in the playoffs. And so James Harden is a guy who's skilled enough to where you got to at least like send the second guy. And that's something at the very least.
Yeah. And also too, this is where, and I'm going to flip back to the Lakers now. This is what has made the Lakers so devastating over the course of the playoffs is that they not only have one of those guys, they have two of them. And
yeah, that's right.
And that's what's making them incredibly difficult to beat in a 7-game series, which for the proponents of people who believed in the Lakers for the entire season, or even gave them a legitimate, even more than a legitimate chance to win the championship, but probably placed them as co-favorites or the favorite, was that understanding of when you got to the playoffs, beating a team with Anthony Davis and LeBron James four times over the course of a 2-week period was going to be just really, really difficult. And the problem, and to now pivot back to the Heat just for one second, the Heat are manufacturing situations where the Lakers are putting two on the ball. They're doing it with their shooting. They're doing it with their screen game. They're doing it with their dribble handoff actions. But the result of that is then still a challenge shot in the restricted area by a player who is not as good as a LeBron James or an Anthony Davis or even a James Harden offensively, right? Jim, like, you're getting those shot attempts from maybe a Jimmy Butler or a Kelly Olynyk, right? And Jimmy Butler is obviously an all-star caliber player. I don't want to put him in the same sentence as a Kelly Olynyk. I'm just saying that you run down the options of the guys who are benefiting from that two on the ball action, and they're still being put in positions where the Lakers are challenging them on those plays. They're not getting
with the
wide
athlete.
Open layups. Yeah. With the better athlete.
With the better athlete. And yeah, man, I'm just stunned. I'm stunned by this team. How many of those guys do you think are in the NBA at any given time? You know, you said we got two of them. How many are in the NBA right now? You don't have to rank them. I'm not asking you. Just kind of in the vicinity of being that level of a weapon in the playoffs.
Maybe six.
Yeah.
Seven. Right? I would put
Does
Kawhi.
Anyone else have two of them?
No. I would put Kawhi up there.
Mm-hmm.
On some levels, I would probably put Giannis up there, even though he's still got some growing to do in terms of rounding out his game.
I think the triple threat stuff, I don't think you can put him in that tier with the... He needs to be able to score and have... He needs to be able to shoot
and
score out a triple threat. He can't just... It can't just be like, oh, we're going to really focus on building a wall and that shuts down. And
I'd be very...
Like, Giannis is still fantastic, right?
I'd be very interested to see what he looks like in like a different offensive system. If he was like a roller more rather than a ball handler more. If he was...
That's fair. That's
right?
Fair.
Like
He's a bad dude. Yeah.
I think that there are schematic things that you could do.
Yeah, that's a good point. That anyway, element of it can't be overlooked. Yeah.
And I would put Luka there personally.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he is a he is an elite.
No, I just
he is a
I hadn't thought of it already. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he's one of those weapons already. Yes. That's crazy.
That's crazy. On like in his own way, Harden is up there. Postseason failures aside, I'm just saying, just in terms of the way you have to game plan for him, is still you're still not saying, oh, okay, well, we're just going to guard this guy one on one.
I'm talking like LeBron James, Anthony Davis level weapons.
I mean, okay, well, then we probably name them all:
LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard,
probably Luka, Kevin Durant.
Yeah,
right.
And I'm talking playoff situations.
Yeah, Steph Curry.
And I would say Steph Curry, of course.
Steph Curry.
The thing about Steph is his size.
Yeah,
right?
But
he's a different type of weapon. Yes, he is a different type of weapon.
He bends
of a similar caliber.
Yes,
you're right.
Bends the floor in a way, right? And so
100%.
Right? And so you asked how many? Six or seven?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, and we're the only team with two of them.
Like, it's definitely not 10.
No.
And this is why those look in their own way. This is why the Warriors were what the Warriors were when they had Durant and KD, right? Is they had two of those guys too. And they had a very versatile defense and they had a bunch of really good and smart role players. And look, I'm not crowning the Lakers yet. They're halfway home.
Uh-huh.
Right? And for all the talk that we've made about the Heat's lack of answers and the schematic issues that they face moving forward in the series, to say nothing of the personnel stuff and the injury issues that they're going to have to work through, and the question marks around that moving forward. I'm not someone who blows out the candles on a birthday cake that's still at the store.
Yeah.
Right? So we
shouldn't
gonna
be doing that these days for sure.
So we're going to wait a little bit.
Yeah.
Before we talk more about what it's going to look like after something happens when it hasn't happened yet. But if this team is able to put together multiple seasons where they play at this type of level, we will be having similar conversations about them that we've had about other great teams. Those are conversations for another day. It is very interesting though to me to sort of see the manifestation of the greatness of these two specific players and how it's coming together in a way that really is at the top of what we envisioned it could be. And that's as a fan, that really is a wonderful thing to watch, despite some of the frustration stuff that I expressed earlier during the pod, right? Which was me in the weeds. This is like 10,000 foot view. That's what this is right now, which I think is where you were talking about. You were hovering with your hot cocoa during this game.
That's what, like, I'm watching with Anthony Davis showing that he's the way he's played, man, this postseason run. If you got that guy and LeBron James, that's my, you know, hot cocoa on the couch.
Yeah,
that's where that confidence comes from, right? It's like, oh, you got two of those guys, and you know who the third star on this team is the team defense.
Yeah,
it shows up. It's we talked all year long on who's going to be the third guy. Is it going to be Kuz? Is Danny Green going to be that shooter that complements the LeBron AD pick and roll? It's so fun to think back on how we thought it was going to go and how it actually has gone. And so rarely in life does something outperform your best case scenario expectations. And this team is better than I could have possibly imagined they were going to be. And I'm a Laker fan. So, and then some pretty cool stuff happened with me, with the Lakers too. So I am just like in this moment, blown away, appreciating, so excited about what this team is, because so rarely in life does something work out better than you could have possibly imagined.
Can we talk numbers really quickly? Because I just want to give some individual players a little bit of love, right? Because we've done a lot of sort of team-wide stuff and big picture stuff about where this team sits within the construct of the league and everything else. But LeBron James, 33-9-9. Zero turnovers, 14 for 25, 56% shooting. Anthony Davis, 32 points, 14 rebounds, one assist, one steal. 15 for 20 from the field. This dude hit 75% of his shots.
In a finals game, man, 15 for 20. Are you kidding me?
Rajon Rondo, our favorite whipping boy for a lot of the season.
Never a bad word to say ever again. I hope he forgives me.
16 points.
Yeah, man.
4 rebounds.
Yeah.
10 assists. 1 turnover. 5 for 9 from the field. 3 for 4 from deep. Right? And so, look, man. I know the role players didn't shoot that well. We mentioned Danny Green and KCP. I want to show a little bit of love to Kyle Kuzma. He was a little wild tonight. He was a little wild in stretches, but I thought he played with wonderful energy, and he did. He hit a great three. He had a great cut with a great pass from Dwight Howard. There were some things that happened this game that sort of made me stand up for a second and just appreciate that.
Yeah.
Look at these guys work through it. And
yeah.
And so I don't want to, like, act like the entire game was me being a sourpuss about them, like, not making the extra pass, right? There were so many little things that, in the context of a game, they just did well and played smart and played together. And was it their best game? Was it their most efficient game? Was it even their best defensive game? It was none of those things. But over the course,
it was a very poor game, in fact, for, like, we did a lot of things quite poorly.
But over the course of it all, you saw those flashes of greatness, both individually and as a team, from a teamwork perspective, where it really was wonderful to watch. And so I wanted just to make sure that we do continue to appreciate what these guys are doing and sort of marvel at some of the performances. I thought Rondo, this game specifically, I thought Rondo was so important Mm-hmm. And
you put him in the middle of that zone, and he was just carving him up, man.
He was.
It's like ball fakes and eye movement to divert defenders. So good.
I thought, you know, Caruso was a minus five. He was the only player today who had a negative plus minus. He also had a great, like, a couple great drives against the zone. He had that great fourth quarter possession where he drove the zone and then passed it to AD. I think that was with like 4 minutes left or 3.5 minutes left, and AD got that monster dunk. And the game wasn't in question, but it was one of those possessions where both teams had sort of gone empty for a few mm-hmm. straight possessions. And then you thought, okay, if Miami just gets one basket here, it's going to be seven or it's going to be eight. And maybe they have some life. And then instead, AD gets that dunk and it's like back to 12 or something. And you just felt like, oh, okay. Just like I appreciated that KCP three. He had been ice cold the entire game, but he hits that three in the corner with like 2 minutes left or a minute and a half left. And suddenly it's 13 again. And you're like, oh, that's the dagger, right? Now, the game was over already, but I did feel good for the game really being put away at that point, uh-huh. even though it was not in question. But I felt good for KCP after having been at that point 1-for-10 or 1-for-9 from three, that he was able to sort of hit that one that was like, okay, the game is now no longer in question at all. Yeah. Those are all just, I really love this team.
Mm-hmm.
And it,
me too.
And those plays were the personification of that. Just through over the course of the game, just watching them make those plays for each other in a way that really shows you what type of team they are, and not just AD and LeBron being stars.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Make sure you enjoy this. We're gonna have just a couple more games of this, I believe. Make sure that you just take a little bit of time to enjoy that. You're watching for the first time the last couple games of an all-time great team. I hope you really enjoy, and we have ourselves a big old party not too long from now. But I really think we got this. I think it's not just, you know, my Laker fan heart talking, but it's my basketball head. I think there's just unconquerable, unsolvable problems for Miami. We will see. Lakers win 124-114, take a commanding 2-0 lead in the 2020 NBA Finals. We will be back. Next game's on Monday, right?
Sunday.
Sunday. Oh, Sunday. That's right. Sunday at 4:30 Pacific, I believe.
Sunday, Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Sunday and then Tuesday. And so, yeah, we'll record after Sunday's Game 3. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We will catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. This pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Campbell in and out. The ball is tipped, and it's saved. 3 seconds left. Here's Van Exel. This is for the win. He got it.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds, an amazing performance by Kobe. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me? I know Red Auerbach is rolling over.
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal!
Are you kidding me?
How strong was that? A triple on a fall away in the corner with a shot clock down.
Lakers by three.
Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddie pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
And the critical part was Pietrus jogging back. Didn't bounce the floor. It's a two-for-one situation.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Powell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable.
Bryant. Yes. And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.